When central bankers talk, the world shakes.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Many of the world's central bankers are in Jackson Hole, Wyoming today to enjoy views of the Grand Tetons while talking monetary policy. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen will speak in just about 3 hours. The speech will be watched closely, in part because it was at this venue that her predecessor took the wraps off his grand notion of stimulating the economy through so-called quantitative easing. Joining us with an international perspective is our friend Andrew Walker, economics correspondent for the BBC. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, David.
Dr. Yellen and her team will likely raise U.S. interest rates next year, perhaps maybe next June. Her speech in a bit will be parsed for hints about this, not just in the U.S., but globally, right?
Oh, absolutely. Whatever happens in the United States has profound economic and financial market implications for the rest of the world. The most obvious direct channel, if you like, is through the dollar and the effect that that might have on oil prices and on competitive issues for countries that export to the United States. So, yes, it is undoubtedly going to be viewed with very careful scrutiny.
And if U.S. interest rates are higher, capital investment money can come flying out of other parts of the world, emerging markets. But, I mean, Europe doesn't need this either.
Well, that's right. Europe has got very low interest rates. So investors, especially in the Eurozone, are looking for places they can make a little bit more money. The calculus in many respects is already adverse for keeping investment funds in the Eurozone. And any hint that rates might start rising a bit sooner in the United States would aggravate that impact. One of the other things that I think people are going to be looking for out of Jackson Hole is what ideas Mario Draghi, the president of the European Central Bank, might have for trying to inject a bit of new life into Europe.
We'll be watching for that closely. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker in London. Thank you.
As always, my pleasure, David.
A new report from the real estate website Zillow says renting is getting very expensive in many parts of the country. Of course, buying and selling a house tends to involve enormous transaction costs. But that said, month to month, the report finds the cost of rent has skyrocketed in 88 of the country's top 100 markets. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
The rent's too damn high. You hear that from L.A. to New York. Zillow says the median rent in July for a condo, single-family home, or co-op was more than $1,300 a month. Part of the problem?
Rents really never had that reset that we saw in home values.
That's Svenja Gudell, a housing economist at Zillow. She says demand increased after the housing bubble burst because many people lost their homes to foreclosure and had to rent. Gudell says that increased demand has pushed rents up 2 to 5% a year.
And incomes haven't kept up with that growth.
Zillow says if you compare the national median gross income and median rent, people signing a lease in June paid almost a third of their income to their landlords. In some places, it's worse. Jamie Ross heads the Florida Housing Coalition.
Right now, we have over 900,000 very low-income households in Florida that are all paying more than half of their income for housing.
Ross says they're just one step away from homelessness. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
I have some live stock market numbers here. The 100-share index in London is down 0.25%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 0.5%. Dow and S&P and NASDAQ futures are doing next to nothing ahead of the Federal Reserve boss's speech.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, managing more than $2 trillion in assets and providing investment solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. By Battelle, every day the people of Battelle apply science and technology to solving what matters most. More at Battelle.org. And by Digital Research, dedicated to helping businesses improve performance through strategic market research, designed to discover what their customers really think. DigitalResearch.com/reason for research.
Newspapers and magazines have had to deal with a decline in advertising for years now, and part of that has been a sharp drop in political ads of the printed kind. But there's a notable exception to that, as Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Candidates still see value in papers that serve specific communities, African Americans, Spanish speakers. Felipe Corseni teaches multicultural marketing at Florida State University.
I think that many campaigns consider these as relatively inexpensive ways of reaching people that they might not be able to reach otherwise.
That makes them popular with local candidates and no-brainers for national candidates who get a lot of bang for their buck. That's according to Ken Goldstein, an expert on election ads at the University of San Francisco.
Newspaper advertising budgets are a rounding error in campaign budgets.
Still, many newspapers are not eager to leave any money on the table, and they play up their ability to target specific segments of the population.
In some ways, newspapers were the internet before internet was the internet.
Goldstein says micro-targeting, something that's in vogue right now, started with these smaller print publications.
I'm Cheryl Maynor, and I'm the publisher at the Chicago Defender newspaper in Chicago, Illinois.
Maynor is the first woman to run the paper in its 109-year history. She says it continues to have a loyal readership, African Americans in the Chicago area and around the country.
We have been able to stand where others who are more generalized have fallen.
The newspaper is covered and engaged with local politics from its very beginning during the Great Migration. Maynor says she expects there will be a significant amount of political advertising ahead of city elections in the spring. Aldermen see the paper as a way to reach their constituents. State and national politicians recognize it's a way to reach specific voters, something that's hard to do with TV ads.
When you place an ad in the publication that they read, that they trust, that they respect, and you're asking them for their vote, now you're actually talking to them.
According to media analyst Ken Doctor, papers like the Chicago Defender are attractive for another reason. Campaigns spend a lot of time going after undecided voters.
But that voter who has made up his or her mind but is not yet sure they're going to the polls is equally important.
And part of the Chicago Defender's mission has been, and continues to be, to get its readers to vote. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And New York City's public advocate on Thursday pushed for police to wear video cameras in high-crime areas. This in the wake of Ferguson, Missouri, and the death of a man in New York this summer after police used an apparent chokehold. Cops and cameras is a complicated matter, including safeguarding the video data and the cost of managing it. If you missed it on the air, we have more on that at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Here with three things that could benefit from a couple of good data scientists: maternal mortality, low graduation rates, and urban blight.
They have no idea that those problems have data and that their skills can be helpful in solving those problems.
I'm Kai Rizdal, Big Data for Social Good, next time on Marketplace from APM.